At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Today we are diving headfirst in one of the world's most controversial legal mysteries of the last decade. And, you know, so supposedly we just solved it. I don't know how we solved it, but it's been solved. Jeffrey Epstein, the client list. For years, this has been referenced in headlines, courtrooms, conspiracy circles alike, government agencies talking it. Basically, everybody stating it's there. It exists in some way, shape, or form. Believed by many to hold the names of powerful individuals tied to Epstein's trafficking network. But now, in that stunning, magical twist, the U.S. government says it never existed. Was it ever real? Was it buried? Or was it public fed a myth? Joining us to break it all down is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis, bringing his legal insight into what's fact, what's fiction, and what the justice system may never want us to see. Eric, let's start here. Now the government's claiming no Epstein list, the client list doesn't exist, never happened. Is it legally plausible that this thing truly never existed?
You know, it's a little hard to say. You know, whether Epstein had sort of created his own list, some sort of little black book that he had that the government got, that is, of course, disputed. You know, whether the government received information and created their own list, sort of synthesized evidence from different investigations and put together something for themselves, that is also disputed. It seems unusual that just no one would know any other participants or players in this sort of decades-long sex trafficking ring.
Well, I think we need to define, I mean, what is the list? I mean, that's, I think, a big thing, too. Is the list some list that he has that he had in a black book of taking notes of all of the people? Is it just names of people that were in his black book? Is it a flight log of people coming to and from the island and how long they were there? Is it literally a blackmail list of so-and-so was with so-and-so and so-and-so and their pet golden retriever, which makes it really freaky and weird, list that he can then, go off on people with? When you hear the list, how have you always interpreted?
You know, in my experience, a criminal who is engaging in decades-long criminal activity like sex trafficking, they're not necessarily going to have like a handwritten list on some, you know, paper at home that says, hey, person number one is this guy, person number two is this gal. That seems pretty unusual. I doubt that it exists in that kind of a form. That being said, throughout the numerous investigations and court cases involving Jeffrey Epstein and affiliates, Ghislaine Maxwell, namely as one of them, the government certainly received information about alleged other participants and possibly accomplices. And so in my appraisal, that's more what the list could be, is sort of the government's synthesis of different evidence and who was involved allegedly in these misdeeds.
Yeah, I hear you there. I've always taken it as like a flight log. So look, we know that exists. There's no disputing a flight log exists. Why don't we have that? I mean, if this is the list to go to that's how I thought of the list as, is like, okay, well, who was on the plane? Were they there for like a day? Were they there for a week? I think that would be very telling as to what went on, now that we know what went on that island. But I guess, you know, is the government playing loose with the words here, really, of just like the list? Oh, you meant that list. this other list. And oh, we thought you meant that. Like, I don't know, because this seems a little bizarre because they're not even defining what the list even is exactly.
Yeah. You know, when certain politicians and administrations want to use it to their benefit, they're all gung-ho about talking about the list. But then when they're pressed on it, the details are kind of scarce. You know, what I think is that there are flight logs, there are certainly texts, emails, different communications. And my apprehension is the government put that together and said, hey, here's sort of a master document that discusses Jeffrey Epstein and everything that went on and other folks involved. It incorporates like a flight list, text messages, emails, witness testimony, that kind of thing. And I'm not aware of any law that would prevent the government from disclosing that.
It's why would they not want to disclose it, I think, is the bigger question, and why we're all sitting here wondering what is going on. I mean, could this list have been sealed under protective order or a grand jury secrecy? I mean, and even if so, I mean, it would still exist. But would the government have to recognize its existence if that were the case?
You know, I'm not aware of any legal requirement for the government to tell the truth, and they sometimes don't. Even if it was sort of under seal or under protective order, that wouldn't be forever. It wouldn't be indefinite, and it wouldn't give the government grounds to say it actually doesn't exist. I think if the government was being truthful, they would have to say, hey, it does exist, but it is under sort of a protective order. But that wouldn't exist forever. There's no legal mechanism by which you can say, hey, keep this a secret forever.
Well, completely. And depending on what kind of log or list this is and who's on it is going to play a big part in if it ever actually comes out. What sort of incentive does the government have to even put this thing out, especially if it has a lot of people's names on it? I mean, obviously, there's the let's protect people that have been abused, but Epstein's dead. And you just have a list of people who came and went from that island. And, you know, unless you got proof of something they did, it's like going to a Diddy party. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I was there. There's pictures, but you can't prove I did anything. I mean, is this really almost like that, but with less evidence?
That's kind of my take on it as well. And in terms of incentives, you know, governmental transparency, a lot of politicians have campaigned on this and in fact said, hey, we're going to give transparency to the people. Kash Patel, director of the FBI, had talked about that even in his judicial confirmation hearings, our Senate confirmation hearings. And so, you know, there's a transparency issue, but there's also, you know, we want to protect alleged victims and such, but I think that could be done while still disclosing some information in which the public has an interest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't honestly know, I mean, how much the government is truly interested in protecting any of the victims in this. I mean, considering looking at what we've seen, Ms. Guffrey the other day died, you know, and that could have, there was a lot of factors, you know, supposedly at play there. But, you know, it's another person who had information, who was very outspoken, who disappeared, or didn't really kind of went off into her own world and seemingly had a very hard time doing that. So I don't know how much, you know, obviously on the surface, that's what the public would like. But when it comes to protecting all of these human beings who have so much power, who may have been involved in this, that's a scary prospect of what's the bigger importance here in terms of continuity, maybe, of government. How does a prosecutor decide whether to charge the powerful third parties in this? I mean, the DOJ said no uncharged individuals had sufficient evidence against them. I mean, that's obviously for them to judge. But if the public ever saw a list of the evidence there, that may be up for argument.
Yeah, you know, I question the government's representation on that. In terms of charging decisions, really what a prosecutor looks at is, hey, is there an applicable criminal charge? Do I have sufficient evidence to bring the charge? So the threshold for that is probable cause. It's a low standard. It's not, it's pretty easy to meet probable cause. The prosecutor also has to, you know, decide, hey, can I ultimately prove this at trial? Do I have a reasonable belief that I could do that? And then lastly, are there any sort of policy considerations for whom we are potentially charging? But we got to make sure we're not doing this on a selective basis where, hey, you know, this guy is buddies with a big politician, so we're not going to charge him. And this guy I don't like, so we are going to charge him. Those considerations cannot come into play.
Is that what makes
this?
I mean, should not, sure. But is that what makes this maybe so difficult of if you started picking and choosing who you're going to charge on this thing, the public's going to, what's the whole damn list? You can't just say, well, this one's on there, but no, we can't tell you who else is, because that gets to be very, very cherry picking. I mean, they shouldn't do that. They can't technically do that, but they sure would do that, I would imagine. But maybe it's easier just to say there is no list, so they don't have to deal with that who else is on this thing fiasco that would ensue, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think that at this point, the administration is trying to kind of keep it quiet. You know, Pam Bondi, the attorney general, came in guns ablaze, and she said, hey, we're going to be transparent. This is Epstein release one. And she released these binders to these influencers. And lo and behold, it was pretty underwhelming. It was a lot of stuff that the public already had. In fact, almost all of it had already been publicly disclosed. And so now they've done an about face where they're kind of like saying, hey, there's no list. There's not really much else we're going to give you. And so what's the reason for that 180?
Well, and what's the reason, too? I mean, I found it very interesting where they've been talking about this list forever, and they were all so proud, and the one made the cover sheet and then put a bunch of blank pages behind it. Look, we all have a list, and there was no list that they were holding up for everyone. But the fact that they were talking about having a list, we got the list, it's on my desk, the list, and now they're walking it back. And look, I'm not being political here, but then you have Trump jumping in that cabinet room conversation going, you guys are still asking about Jeffrey Epstein? Like, of course people are. That's so old news. Like, yeah, because you're on the fucking list. And you have Elon Musk saying he's on the list. You know, their former, you know, the former buddies there. And yeah, I mean, it seems very convenient. This damn thing is just suddenly poof up in smoke and never existed. Seems like kind of a crazy thing to say. I think I might stick with I'm just not going to release it. But for it to be non-existent, I mean, are we going to see somebody? Is this going to come back up? What's going to happen from here? Are people going to dig? Can anyone reveal the existence of this list?
You know, if it happens, I think it would probably have to be someone who is on the inside or formerly on the inside. And so, as you mentioned, Elon Musk claims to have some kind of knowledge about additional information regarding the Jeffrey Epstein investigation that has not been disclosed and that has been arguably, according to some, withheld by the government. And so, you know, there has to be more information that has been disclosed. I've reviewed what's been disclosed. And just in criminal investigations, we're talking about federal resources. We're talking about more money than God. All these investigators, there's got to be witness statements. There's got to be photos, interviews, perhaps video, all of which or most of which the public has not seen.
Well, this sounds just like Diddy. I mean, but this obviously happened before Diddy. They have all this stuff, all this material. And then when it comes time to play game, suddenly that person disappeared, and it's not quite as strong as we thought it was, or for some reason we're not bringing the case that we claim exists. Is it them overstepping and overstating what they have? That doesn't usually seem to be how they handle things. They usually are going to state if they have it, they're going to come in with it, but now that doesn't exist. I mean, that's, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of that case or this case. When it came, push came to shove, it seemed a lot of people are being protected here. And that's what I'm wondering about. There was a 2008 non-prosecution agreement, a shield of sorts for co-conspirators. Is that a shield for co-conspirators? Essentially, Epstein's original plea deal gave immunity to any potential co-conspirators. I don't know how strong that is or how ironclad that would be, but could that effectively have really ended efforts to prosecute others? So even if there is a list, what does it matter if that was part of the Epstein deal?
you know, it does appear that there were measures taken to shield not only Epstein, but also some of his alleged affiliates. But, you know, there is the dual sovereignty doctrine saying that both the federal government and local jurisdictions, including state, including potentially municipal jurisdictions, can still look into matters, can still conduct investigations, they'll bring charges even when one of those entities has provided immunity. And so that wouldn't prevent other governmental entities, law enforcement entities, from doing investigations. And I'll note, Tony, that usually when we're talking about sex assault, especially sex assault on a minor, there are not statute of limitations issues that come into play with that, at least in most jurisdictions. So it's not like it's too old to look into. It can still be looked into, and there's a question on everyone's mind as to why it's not.
Exactly, because there's some pretty big names on there. Virginia Guffrey, she's the one who just died. She named Prince Andrew, Alan Dershowitz. It's powerful testimony, but not always enough for a conviction. I mean, what sort of corroboration would be needed to move victim testimony from allegation to prosecution on, you know, some of these people? I mean, Dershowitz is still out there and the allegation has been there forever. He, of course, has denied it. And there's a lot of other people out there who have accusations against them, too. Never, ever been charged. But if you got someone saying, look, this, the logs, the records of them being there just don't exist, even though they do. You're going against the government on that one. And I don't know how you're going to really get anywhere at that point.
Yeah, Tony, sometimes the tragedy with sex assault cases is that it happens behind closed doors and the perpetrators have taken measures to conceal what happened. And so just an alleged victim's statement that was some sexual misconduct is probably not enough. You know, if there were photographs proving that the individual was there in the vicinity at the time, if there was video, if there was corroborating testimony from other alleged victims or even workers at a place at which these alleged sex assaults were happening, those could get you past the threshold to file a charge and proceed with a prosecution. But that's the thing, is that someone just coming forward and saying this happened oftentimes is not enough in the legal context.
Yeah, well, look at Diddy's. Look at Cassie and her testimony. Look at all that. And they still said, this is kind of like a domestic matter. Why didn't Ghislaine Maxwell's trial reveal the client list? You know, why didn't we find out more out of all of that fiasco?
You know, I think that was by design. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, in such a trial, it would make sense to bolster one's case to be able to show, hey, Ghislaine Maxwell, you facilitated sex assault on a minor, and you did it with these people, with person one, with person two, with person three, with person four. And we have evidence regarding that. We have documentary evidence, witness testimony, that kind of thing. That would be a strong way to present that case. That's not really how it was presented. It was presented in very, you know, the parameters, the scope of the presentation was rather limited, rather narrow. And again, the question is why? You know, is it to protect these rich and powerful people? And if so, what's the incentive behind protecting them? Why should we be doing that?
Well, exactly. Why? I mean, and I don't know if it just means that I think the fear a lot of people have is, well, a lot of people in super high places were involved in this. I guess my question today is, and is anyone going to be surprised? I mean, is this, if we found out tomorrow, there's this huge list of names of people, big, big people, and on both sides. I'm not just going to say it's all Republican or all Democrat or whatever. Let's say the president's on it. Let's say a bunch of Democrats are on it, like high rank, like just across the board, tons of people. At this day and age, are we going to be shocked? I mean, is it going to be the shock that it would have been 10 years ago? 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Today, if it happens, are people going to resign? Are people just going to deny it and move on? Because that seems to be what a lot of people do, especially when you don't really have, you're not going to have video, you're not going to have pictures, you're going to have text on a page. And all people have to do is say, well, that's not real, that's fake, that's false, and we move on. At the end of the day, if we do get this list, is anyone ever going to be satisfied with it being legitimate?
It's a great question. I think in our modern day and age, that folks would not be overly surprised to see what you've been describing. And then, you know, for the government, if they were to disclose such information, there'd be a lot of pressure on them then to, hey, do we go after, let's say there are, you know, 20 high-level politicians, entertainers, whatever, just hypothetically. Then there's a lot of pressure to prosecute or to take some legal action against these folks. That would be a Herculean effort, especially if we're talking about incidents that happened, you know, more than a decade ago. We're talking about defendants who have more money than God, and they can resist these charges. And so I wonder if the government just said, gosh, you know, if we release this, our next step is going to be so difficult and problematic and perhaps unsuccessful that we don't want to go down towards the end of that road. We just don't want to start on that path by releasing this list.
Are they screwing up even more by now talking about, here's a video we're going to release, and they released some security camera that has a minute of footage missing. Oh, that's how it always does it. Nothing to see here. That's normal. And just expecting that probably, oh, cool. That sounds legit. And it doesn't really show anything. I'm surprised. Like, why are we seeing this now? You said your camera wasn't working to begin with anyhow. Now suddenly you have this little video over here that shows something or nothing. And they're just, and the hell-bent approach on this, that it was suicide at the end of the day. That's what is, despite all of the evidence to the contrary, we have no camera, we have no guard, on a most high-profile person in custody at that moment in time. Yep, it was suicide, and no questions asked. They have a very big credibility problem right now. Or do we have a very big conspiracy problem in our public, where we are far more apt to not believe things that we just feel are kind of ridiculous, considering the circumstances? Or is it a credibility? What's your thought? Because I guess it really could go either way.
Tony, I think we've got both of those problems. I think for one, with the advent of social media and sort of online investigators, some of whom are pretty darn savvy, I think a lot of folks aren't taking things at face value anymore, and they're looking into it for themselves. And so that's driving this. On top of that, perhaps the government just doesn't have all of the stuff that they or the public thinks they might have. And, you know, I think that's fueled a little bit by the government's sensationalism in the beginning, saying, hey, we're going to be transparent. We're going to show you. We're going to get to the bottom of all this corruption.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, they might not have it. And the public saying, hey, what the heck? We want to see this. And now their ears are perked too, and their expectations are unmet.
That's what I wonder about some of this. And in no way am I trying to downplay Epstein or Diddy or anything like that. But I do wonder if the sensationalism, if we in our minds as a public get this appetite and this image of, wow, this is going to be super, super crazy. And then at the end of the day, I mean, it's not good, but it's not, you know, it's not to the level that everybody thinks it is. And I don't know how that could be in this case, considering all of the people who've come forward and all of the disturbing stories of Epstein, that it couldn't be to that level. But Is this somewhat of an overblown case where we are expecting more than actually exists, and now we're just not getting it because it's not out there, or because we're getting too close to the, you know, the center of the flame, right, where the gas is coming out and it's super, super hot?
You know, I think the Diddy case is a decent analog for this issue. When that case began, there was all this hype that the prosecutor did a press release. There was sensationalism. You know, we had the expectation there'd be like Caligula-esque, you know, Roman orgies with, you know, sex slaves and yeah, drugs and guns and all this stuff. And then when we got to the case, you know, it was the federal case. It was a handful of threesomes, which were not at all what we expected. And so I think that there is sort of this driver in the media, in politics, and in society in general that are hyping up our expectations when the reality might be a little less shiny.
A little more tame than maybe expected. Or, like I said, maybe we're getting too close to the flame. And I wonder if these two cases are different, Diddy and Epstein, if if one was more overhyped than reality is, and if one is just is the sun, and no one can get close enough to it to truly tell what the hell actually happened on that Jeffrey Epstein Island all those years ago.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.